And from what you tell me, neither you nor Eric nor many of your friends sought out counseling afterward. No, we didn't. Why do you think that is? Her shoulders circled vaguely and settled again. We wanted to forget. Put it behind us. The worst was over, right? Rita said nothing. Eric said the day of the shooting was nothing compared to the week after, when he and David went to all the funerals. 4 funerals in 3 days. That's what finally broke him down. The last service was Taylor's, and then he cracked. His mother came to see me in the hospital. She sat on the bed and took my hands and said she needed to talk to me as a mother. I think she meant woman to woman. And I felt like an equal in the conversation, like we were conferring as the two women who loved him most. Eric was sick. He wasn't sleeping, he was losing weight, and Christine was worried about what to do. And I said, take him home. He needs to go home and collapse. I knew him so well, I knew he'd go if she asked. Or rather, if she told. He needed directions, he was waiting for someone to tell him what to do. And I was right. He cried when we said goodbye, but he wasn't fighting either of us. He was so tired. And you? Daisy leaned to scratch her ankle. What about me? How long were you in the hospital? 3 weeks. In bed the whole time? For the first week, 10 days, maybe. Then I started in-house physical therapy. Nothing for my left leg, I couldn't put weight on it yet. But stretching everything else, getting some movement and range of motion going, little things. Rita shifted in her chair. What was that like? For a minute, Daisy barely understood what she meant. The question knocked on a door, long closed, the hinges and latch cobwebbed and rusty, the nameplate missing from the mailbox. It was fine, formed on her tongue, and she nearly said it, but the door cracked. She looked within, and it wasn't fine. Awful, she said. Scary. Frustrating. Painful. The words felt inept. Labels with the wrong name on mailboxes. Unopened deliveries. A fragile silence, more fragile than the edges of skin around the perimeter of her fasciotomies. One hand stroked the line of scar tissue through her jeans. They never give you a straight answer, she said. It's all might and maybe and possibly, probably not, but a chance. We're cautiously optimistic. After a while, I stopped asking if I would dance again. And I stopped listening to all the hypothetical cover-our-ass bullshit. I thought, who's going to win? Me or James? You dance, or else he's got the last word. Fuck that. Fuck him. It'll be hard, fine. It'll be painful. Bring it. It'll break my heart. I'll break it my way. I hardened down. Eric would say, I went into my war room. I could almost feel it. Like a coat of shellac over my heart. No more crying. It's time for work. She put her hand into the bowl of dried lavender and lemon verbena and let the soft, dusty leaves and tiny buds sift through her fingers. Then she held them to her nose, inhaling, smelling her mother. I went home after 3 weeks. Finally home in my own bed. Mamu filled a big vase with lavender and put it on my night table. I remember sitting on the front porch, breathing in the sun and the flowers. And Eric was home then? Yes, in Rochester. He was going to start an internship at Lancaster in June, rebuilding the theater, so we had all of May to get through before we'd see each other. It was hard. We talked on the phone every night, but it was the longest we'd been apart. She could remember the spring nights, curled up to the telephone, remember Eric's voice and the keen, frustrated longing that laced their conversations, but none of the words. I started physical therapy, cardio training at first, wheelchair workouts, building my endurance back up. 3 of us were under the same trainer, one guy who was a double amputee and another who was paralyzed from the waist down, and me, all working with Steph. Steph? Daisy nodded. A former drill sergeant, roughly the size of a redwood. Funny as hell, pure take-no-prisoners motivation. The only one who said to me, yes, when I asked if I'd dance again. Actually, the answer was, fuck yeah. But oh my God, he was tough, brutal. I thought I'd survived being shot only to die at the hands of a sadist. I got so mad at him once, I said, first thing I'm going to do when I get the strength back in this leg is kick you in the nuts. And he gave me a shit-eating grin and said, I look forward to it. I'll even hold still.
Did you?
Rita said, smiling. No. By the end of the summer, I loved him too much. Looking back was like flipping through a scrapbook underwater. A blurred collection of mementos stretching from May to August. Washed out sepia tones. Pages stuck together, melding days into weeks. Weeks into months. She worked and trained and recovered. Fell down and dragged herself up again. Took faltering steps to the shouted approval of her war mates, neither of whom would ever walk again. She cried to the impervious ears of Steph, who waited with beefy arms crossed until the crying was over, then threw her back into the battle. The pool, the exercises, the weights, the steps, ice therapy, ultrasound therapy, heat therapy, massage therapy. Life revolved around her body. Her body's feet measured in millimeters, then inches, then steps. Ounces turned to pounds. She could put weight on her left leg for seconds, which gradually became minutes. Her gait smoothed out. The limp began to fade. One joyful morning in August, she put her feet into first position and did a plié and a rise onto the balls of her feet, both knees straight and true. Steph had wagered she wouldn't reach this important goal until September. Both a good sport and a man of his word, he wore a tutu and tiara to work the next day. At the time, I thought it was the hardest thing I'd ever done in my life, Daisy said. She turned ironic eyes around Rita's office, shaking her head the teeniest bit. Little did I know. Don't dismiss it, Rita said, quietly. It was an amazing and heroic accomplishment. None of what's happening here invalidates how hard you worked. This is simply different work. Daisy smiled, tasting it. It was a long summer. It must have been. I went back to Philly one weekend, and David met up with me. What for? Rita asked. I needed him. Black cake. She'd never asked David for a favor before, but she called him now. Will you do something for me?
Anything, he said. It's done.
He drove her downtown to the tattoo parlor Will frequented and where Eric got his Daisy. The shop was next door to a West Indian grocery. They appeared to be co-owned, or at least on friendly business terms. The adjoining wall within had been opened up, and the smell of spice drifted around the artist's stations along with the hypnotic offbeat of reggae. A gorgeous black couple lounged by the front desk, the woman sitting on the man's lap. His hair was in dreadlocks. Hers was barely fuzz along her perfectly shaped skull. She wore not a shred of makeup or jewelry, except for a single delicate silver ring in her nose. As the bell rang on the door jamb, she looked first at David, then at Daisy, who was on her crutches today, letting her leg rest. The black woman smiled.
Hello, sister.
With her eyes, Daisy asked David to hang back, and he did, taking a seat on one of the chairs by the front window. Daisy crouched smoothly to the desk and asked if she could see Omar.
I am Omar,
the man said, reaching past his lapmate's body to offer a large hand. My name's Daisy, she said, shaking it. You know my friend, Will. Omar put up his palm, silencing her. The woman slid from his lap, and he came around the desk and set both his hands on Daisy's shoulders. His eyes swept from the crown of her head down to her feet.
I know who you are, he said. I inked your boy. William sent him to me after the shooting.
Yes.
He described your eyes.
His hand still on Daisy's shoulders, Omar turned to his friend.
She was at Lancaster, she and her boy and William. Do you remember the Daisy? This is she.
His voice broke and he cleared his throat.
I remember, the woman said. How are you, sister? Let's sit down, Omar said. Tell me what I can do. Do you want me to come back later, Daisy?
David called from his chair. Daisy reached her hand to him, beckoning. No, stay with me, she said. This is David, Eric's friend. She squeezed the fingers that had crept into hers. And mine. The woman, introduced as Camille,
brought David a cup of strong coffee and Daisy a cup of chai tea, an anise star floating on its creamy top. From her bag, Daisy drew out the sheet of paper she'd been doodling on for the better part of a week.
"Don't laugh," she said to Omar. "I never laugh at someone's vision," he said. "Bad for business."
She smoothed it out on his desk. Eric's last name means fisherman in Swedish. Everyone calls him Fish.
So?
She had attempted to make a fish shape from the letter spelling Svensk Fisk. Omar and Camille bent their heads over it, exchanging glances and nods.
"Oh, yes, I see," Omar said. "I see it."
He took a fresh sheet of paper from his desk drawer and clicked the end of a mechanical pencil.
"Camille, love, get me that book. The one with the Norse runes."
Camille made a face but went over to the bookshelf.
"I don't know. I think runes will be too angular and harsh. The fish won't ripple."
"It will,"
Omar said, drawing.
"Think I'm going to ink something on a dancer that doesn't move?"
Camille's upper lip curled as she mocked him. Setting the book down on the desk, she inhaled by Daisy's head.
"Goodness, you smell like black cake."
"Like what?"
"Jamaican rum cake. It's made with burnt sugar essence."
"Everyone thinks she smells like sugar,"
David said. He was walking up and down the panels of designs, arms crossed tight, looking both curious and fearful.
"Are you getting anything today, my friend?"
Omar said, looking up from his sketching.
"Me?"
David's head turned back.
No, she's the brave one. I'm just the chauffeur."
Camille, having slipped away, came back from the grocery side of the building with a small brown bottle with a yellow label. She unscrewed the cap and waved it first under Daisy's nose, then David's. A thick, singed smell wafted.
"Oh, yeah,"
David said, closing his eyes as he inhaled.
"You make cake with that and rum?"
"Black cake," Camille said. "You soak dried fruit in rum for 3 months beforehand. Then the essence is mixed in with a batter. It's religious."
"How much essence?" Daisy asked, already composing a recipe for Francine. "Few tablespoons?"
Camille smiled. "The whole bottle, sister. And a dozen eggs."
"Jesus,"
David said. "My aunt is a perfumer," Daisy said. "She made my scent for me when I was 16, but I don't know what's in it."
"Well, if the formula's ever lost, you can dab a little of that shit behind your ears,"
David said.
"I have many friends who do,"
Camille said.
"What do you think?"
Omar said, turning the paper around to face Daisy. Daisy put her hand over her mouth. A little burnt sugar essence had spilled on her fingers, and the smell filled her head as she took in Omar's design. The letters of Svensk Fisk, cunningly drawn to evoke the shape of a fish. The first K making the dorsal fins. The last K made the tail. The letters hinted at runes, yet they had movement. The little fish swam before her eyes.
"It's perfect," she said.
David nodded, a smile playing around his mouth.
"Will you color them in?"
"Red,"
Omar and Daisy said at the same time. It took a half hour for Omar to ink the fish into the hollow of Daisy's right hip bone.
"He usually works much faster than this," Camille said, a loving hand on the artist's head. "But he's crying too much."
"Two things make me cry,"
Omar said, turning his head to press his shoulder to his damp eyes.
"Love and bravery."
Daisy's eyes were streaming as well, more from emotion than pain. She'd endured worse. She didn't need the hand David offered, but she held it anyway, because she knew he wanted to feel useful. His eyes were dry, but he looked a shade green. Every now and then, he unscrewed the cap from the bottle of burnt sugar essence and waved it under his nose like smelling salts before passing it to Daisy. Like the hand-holding, Daisy let him think it helped, touched by how he was caring for her today. When all was done, Omar folded Daisy into his arms and held her a long moment. He smelled like sandalwood and strength.
"Take care of your boy,"
he said.
"And come see me again soon."
"Come around Christmas time,"
Camille said, as she hugged David and gave him the bottle of sweet extract to keep.
"And have black cake with us."
Oh, days.
Eric said. They were in her bedroom at La Tarasque, Eric kneeling at her feet. First his fingers traced the tattoo, then his mouth. Her pores were wide open and aching for his touch. Do you like it? She said.
I love it.
Her hand caressed his hair. I thought a long time about where to put it, somewhere only you could see.
Only me.
His forehead against her belly, arms around her legs. He exhaled. Now his cheek was wet against her skin.
Nobody loves me like you,
he said.
In the dark. Holding your thing. Will came back to school shorn, his magnificent tresses cropped down to the scalp. His strong cheekbones leaped from his face like knives. With nowhere to hide, his beautiful eyes took center stage, liquid brown and haunted under thick lashes and brows. He never spoke of James. Nobody did. Will never apologized for the affair or for his attraction to men, and nobody expected it of him. But his eyes told a different story.
I told him I trusted his hands,
Eric said to Daisy.
I told him sometimes his hands were the only thing between you and a 10-foot fall to the stage, and I trusted them.
I trusted him with you.
He could barely look at me in the hospital. He kept crying and saying, I dropped her, I dropped her.
He was shot through the back and nearly had his hand blown off, Daisy said. It would have been a miracle if he hadn't dropped me. I don't blame him for this. I know you don't, nobody does.
It was nobody's fault, everyone said. It was only James's fault.
Will wouldn't talk about it. His inner experience spoke through his sacrificed hair, his troubled eyes, and a fierce obsession with Daisy's recovery. His dire need to know the whereabouts of his loved ones surpassed even Eric's. Will wanted Lucky, Daisy, and especially Eric, where he could see and touch them. He wanted the four of them together, all the time. The circle pulled tight. The boys at Colby Street, the girls at J Street, David around the corner with Neil Martinez, and John dropping by with carte blanche. They rarely went out. Crowded, noisy places made them uneasy. The world was unpredictable, and strangers untrustworthy. Instead, they gathered close at the girls' apartment and kept company, eating, studying, or watching TV. They stayed up too late, delaying bedtime. All their sleep was sketchy and unpredictable, laced with nightmares they compared with the macabre one-upmanship. John, who had knelt on the stage floor inches from Will's severed fingers, dreamed of dismembered hands in grotesque piles. Neil dreamed of being lost in the caverns of Manhattan, skyscrapers like teeth, and the streets below full of blood. Lucky, so heroic and competent in the theater, now dreamed of walking wounded, of having to make life-or-death decisions which were never right. Will ran in his dreams, ran and ran from an invisible looming danger behind him. He could feel its breath on his cropped head, hear its accusatory laughter inches away. Sometimes he turned to fight, only to find the terror was still behind him. Eric took a shot point-blank in the chest in his nightmares. He sat dying in the aisle as James went back to the stage to finish what he started. David wouldn't tell anyone his dreams. Daisy had two. One she told, the other she kept. The shared dream was of blank space, a cavern of dark, yawning nothingness before her eyes. She could sense its dimensions, but not its boundaries. It was endless and predatory, a gigantic oubliette, determined to feed on her sanity. The untold dream repulsed her, a bizarre sexual encounter with Eric where she devoured him, her vulva unfolding like a Venus flytrap, sucking him inside. He went willingly to his death. His expression was one of happy relief, while Daisy screamed in a helpless rage because assuming him into her body wasn't enough to save him. It was never enough. Her libido had been low during the summer, but now it came back to her with a strange desperation, an almost frenetic direness to it. But she couldn't come. It was as if she wasn't allowed. Sex wasn't about frivolous pleasure, it was about protection.
She had a job here to save her man, and after making love, she felt sick to her stomach with a pervasive sense of failure. Sex was playing strange tricks on Eric, too. He wanted it all the time, hungrily grabbing Daisy at every opportunity. He was edgy and passionate before, tender and loving during. But as soon as sex was over, anxiety came for him, galloping over the hill of his mind like a pack of beasts on the hunt, and he fell apart in her arms, unmanned and shaking to his bones. 4 a.m., when the wolves come, Daisy said. She lay tight against his back, pressing his pounding chest with the palm of her hand and feeling responsible for his panic-laced body, feeling helpless to stop it, feeling she missed the one chance to stop it. Now do it right this time, her body chided the next time they had sex. It was always the same. She didn't know what she was doing wrong. The two couples slept at J Street every night, and the house was rarely quiet in the darkest hours. Eric woke up shouting. Daisy woke up screaming. Down the hall, Will bolted upright with a cry. Lucky thrashed in dreams and fell out of bed. I broke the lamp, she said one morning. And for no fun reason. They were brave in the light of day. They tried to laugh off the bad dreams, find the funny in the anxious vulnerability. They were all sitting around late one night, watching a movie. Lucky went upstairs to get a sweater and came back down a minute later. Look at you, she said from the foot of the stairs. 1, 2, 3, 5 guys, and every single one of you has a hand down their pants. As one, the boys looked up and mumbled. What? Daisy burst out laughing. The boys exchanged mild glances, but not one hand moved from its place. Lucky swung around the newel post, her curls bouncing. All of you holding your thing like it's going somewhere.
Hey, you never know, John said. These are tenuous times, Lulu, David said. You keep your friends close, and the junk even closer. I was being polite because ladies were present, Neil said. But hell, now that you outed everyone.
He slid his other hand down his jeans.
Both hands, David said, nodding approval. Get over here, Luck, Will said. Get your hand down here too, for Christ's sake.
Eric said nothing. He toppled over with his head in Daisy's lap, laughing and laughing. One hand over his face, the other still down his pants. Peal after peal of laughter, and soon the knee of Daisy's jeans was damp with his tears.
It's not that funny, Fish, David said.
Yes, it is, he said,
his voice squeaking.
Daisy looked around, suffused with a hysterical happiness. The little living room was full of laughter as invisible golden threads knitted the circle together. Knit one, purl two. Don't forget I love you. We have to stay together, Daisy thought, stroking Eric's head, her lap full of his chuckling. Hold on to these moments. Make it last. If we stay together and find what's funny, we'll be all right. Marrying me. Were you dancing yet?
No, Daisy said. Not in the fall. Still on disability, so to speak. Impatient as hell, but I knew one reckless risk could blow everything. I started to teach, which was eye-opening.
Teach what?
Mostly the beginner and intro ballet classes, but whatever Case needed me to do. We didn't have a replacement for Marie, so he was running both divisions. Another closed door materialized in her mind, painted fresh and white, but spots of rust seeping through. A pretty grill overlay, choked with dry, crumbling leaves. A pot by the jam, filled with dead flowers.
Ciao, Fiorella.
Good morning, little flower. Rita's head tilted, the light catching the lenses of her glasses.
Where are you right now?
Daisy closed her eyes. Marie used to say, if I was tired or slow in class, she'd tease me.
Margarita, darling, why so lazy today? You sleep with the fishes.
Rita's smile was sad. When you think about it, I never got any closure. I didn't go to the funerals. Marie didn't even have one to go to. Her husband had her cremated and took her ashes back to Italy. I never saw her in the hospital.
Never got to go to her bedside and hold her hand or anything. I never saw her again. She disappeared. Didn't really hit me until I got back to school. It was like I almost forgot. She breathed in, let it out, creating a bubble. I kept looking for her, looking for Taylor and Aisha and Manuel. It would hit me at odd moments, come out of the dark to slap my face. They were gone. My tribe. Rita nodded. She touched her fingertips under her eyes. Over the summer, David found one of Taylor's knitting needles backstage. I wrote to her mother and asked if I could keep it, and she said yes. I have it on my dressing table. And I have the hat she made me freshman year. I keep that on my table, too. I like having her near me while I'm getting ready.
She must like that, too, Rita said, softly.
Do you believe in spirits? Daisy asked,
not expecting a personal answer. But
I do, Rita said. I believe they manifest as an energy around us, and I believe they are drawn to the little shrines we make for them. Will got a new tattoo from Marie.
A wheel.
That's how his name sounded when she said it. Wheel, darling. What could I get for her?
A margarita glass?
She pulled at the fringe on a throw pillow. I missed her so much. We, all of us in the ballet division, it was like we were mourning our mother. And when Case asked me to teach some of her classes, I was terrified. Not so much of not being able to do it, but of, I don't know, somehow intruding on her memory. It felt disrespectful. I balked, and Case said, sort of joking but not, "Teach the class or I'll flunk you." And I saw how stressed and hurt and bleeding he was. And I realized he needed me. So I went in and I taught.
And?
She smiled. I loved it. In a way, it was the final touch on all my rehab. We have a saying in dance, to teach is to learn twice. When you're breaking down a movement or a step and explaining it to someone else, you're learning it fresh, learning it better. And in November, when I finally got the green light to go back to class myself, I was ready, and man. Her chest went warm with memory. I walked into the studio that day, and everyone gathered around me, like I was the sun, hugging me and kissing me and high-fiving. It was like coming home. It was the beginning of this little interlude about 2 months, November into the first weeks of January, when it felt like things were turning around.
In what way?
For starters, all the catty, cliquish bullshit in the studio was over. I walked back in, and the place was completely shuffled. No more freshman bars or unspoken rules. Seniors were next to sophomores, mentoring the new kids. It was a family, and I felt at the hub of it, the center of this galaxy of loving, creative energy. It spilled over onto everything else. Will and I were back in partnering class, figuring out how to work with his maimed hand. It was frustrating, but by that time, we ate frustration for breakfast. Yeah, whatever, it's a problem. We'll find the solution. Rita smiled.
I like that.
Then we all went to La Tarasque for Thanksgiving. Eric, Will, Lucky, and David. Mamu made a beautiful dinner, and the next day, everyone went with Pop to cut down the Christmas tree, except Eric and I. We stayed behind and ended up having amazing sex. Rita's chin lifted, but she said nothing. Out of nowhere, Daisy said, a little sweetness creeping into her mouth. It came back, the way it used to be before the shooting. We fell asleep afterward, completely peaceful and relaxed. Got up for dinner, and then we all decorated the tree. Pop put Christmas music on, and Mamu was baking. She found a recipe for these cookies Eric's grandmother used to make when he was little. David was singing funny words to the carols. It was the most perfect night ever. Eric and I made love again and didn't stop. We were stuffing our faces with it and crying in between. We were so happy. Rita steepled her fingers beneath her nose.
Why do you think it was that way? At that time?
I don't know. Lucky always said La Tarasque had some kind of magic in it.
The place where you could go and be safe, yes.
Maybe that was it.
We were away from Lancaster and in the safest, most loving place imaginable. No bad memories associated. Beautiful, tactile images beaded the windows of Daisy's memory. Eric pressing her up against the shower wall in the carriage house's little bathroom. The tiles cool against her back. Thick steam in her lungs. Wet, soapy skin. The hot, hard slide of his cock filling her up to her eyes. A Roman candle orgasm rippling through her belly, squeezing and pulsing. Then the softness of sleep afterward. Snow beginning to fall outside the window. The butter-yellow walls of Francine's kitchen. Red wine and candles on the table. Pine boughs and sparkling ornaments. Laughter up and down the table. Nat King Cole being drowned out by David's dirty lyrics to the Christmas song. Roast nuts chesting on an open fire. Nip frost jacking off your nose. Spicy orange cookies from Eric's childhood prying a name from his memory. Pepar Kakor, he said, slapping a hand on the table. I can't believe I remember. Not only delicious, but laden with magic. You put one in your palm, made a wish, and pressed on the center. If it broke into three pieces, you were granted. If not, you still had a cookie. When we were in bed that night, Daisy said, Eric asked if I ever thought of marrying him. Rita nodded. We'd never talked about marriage, not even hypothetically or jokingly, but he asked, Do you ever think of marrying me? I said, If I marry anyone, it'll be you. She stared down at her lap. Which still feels like the truth to me, she said. I don't know who else I can love. You know, when I was in rehab, the fear of not dancing again motivated me, because the alternative was unthinkable. I didn't know who else I was or what else I could do. I had one thing, and it had been the only thing since I was 5. I had no backup, no other hobbies or interests, no plan B, nothing. Looking at my life without dance was utterly terrifying, and sometimes it feels like losing Eric is no different. Facing that fear in this rehab feels the same way, except now the alternative is all I have. I fought like hell to dance again, and I won. And I fought like hell to get Eric back. And I lost. I'm lost. He left, and I don't know who I am. I don't know who else I can love. Jesus Christ, I don't know what the fuck I'm doing. You're finding out. I'm so afraid, she said, crying. Was this what her life was going to be? Pining and longing and mourning and crying? You've been afraid before. It's a problem. And we'll find the solution, Daisy. Daisy sniffed, wiping her eyes. Stop quoting me. You have good lines. Lines, she said. I haven't talked about that yet, have I? Eyebrows wrinkled. Rita shook her head. Daisy chewed on her bottom lip. Over Thanksgiving, Lucky got pregnant. Of course, we didn't know until weeks later. Meanwhile, December continued on this easy, pleasant trajectory. Life stayed sweet. Nobody was having nightmares. Everyone was having sex. She blew her breath out. But it was short-lived. We came back to school in January, and everything fell apart. Lucky had a miscarriage. She bled out all over our bathroom floor, and Eric went in to help her. The sight of the blood. It unlocked something in him, and he unraveled. We all were shaken up by it. And then started the drugs. Rita turned to Paige. What were you doing? In the beginning, mostly cocaine. Where were you getting it? From David. He was always into some kind of shit, and we got into it too. Coke during the week. Weekends, we did a lot of ecstasy. And then David introduced us to the high roll. Where did you go?
Daisy. A finger snapped in front of her staring eyes. Daisy shook her head and looked at the boy next to her. A tilted chin and sunny smile. Brows furrowed above questioning eyes.
Where did you go?
He asked softly. Open-mouthed, she shook her head and gazed in slow motion. Her brain took an eternity to identify this as the living room.
I live here. I am. I exist.
She stared at the beautiful boy next to her, another oozing interval of time before she remembered he belonged to her. Her atoms stirred in interest, and her mouth grew wet.
Eric, she said, as if she hadn't seen him in years.
Come back, he said. Don't leave me.
He fell face first into her neck, giggling.
Oh my God, I'm so fucking high.
Me too,
she said, pushing the words through a mouth that seemed full of buttercream frosting, so rich it made a nauseous thrum in the back of her throat. Her hand went to Eric's head. She felt all his hairs on her palm. She could count them. In fact, she could gladly sit here the rest of her life and count every single one. Differentiate the blonde, the ash, the brown, and the gold. She ran her hand along the velvet nap at his nape. She giggled at nap and nape, mesmerized by push and pull of tiny hairs. Nap, nape, push, pull, pill. David gave them a magic pill. He called it a high roll, smoking a joint and then doing a hit of ecstasy. Now Daisy's mouth was a cake, and Eric's hair was a waterfall, a field of wheat, an army of fine lines, legions purring under her palm.
Touch me forever,
he said, his smile a delicious thing. She wanted to eat him. She was beyond high. No greater vertical existed. She was at the apex of consciousness where the air thinned into cosmic dust. She was a star. She burned. No need for molecules of oxygen. She was breathing the universe. It was so beautiful. David was gone. Like Santa Claus, he bestowed his gifts upon them and then disappeared up the chimney. Will and Lucky were making out on the floor, writhing and heavy and oblivious. Daisy stared, full of love and fascination. Shirtless and tattooed like a serpent, Will slid beautiful hands up into Lucky's sweater and drew it over her head. And Lucky, who had barely cracked a smile in weeks, was laughing around his kiss. Even her curls were laughing snakes. Eric was kissing Daisy's neck, moving her hair and sliding hot, shaking lips along her skin. She turned her head, caught his mouth. The kiss swirled and meshed like a kaleidoscope. Kissing was magic. Had she ever truly appreciated it before tonight? A sigh echoed within her head as she pulled his tongue against hers. She could do this forever. Thank God for kissing. If only everyone on Earth would kiss like this, it could be the end of war, and she opened her eyes. Her sighing head melted into laughter as she realized it was her own tongue she was orchestrating world peace with. I'm kissing myself, she said, fingertips against her mouth. She had a mouth. She was a mouthed human being inhabiting Earth, a planet hurtling through space and time, and how did it all begin?
Kiss me,
Eric said, pulling her into him. His mouth grabbed hers, catching her lip with the edge of a tooth. The bite of pain was a sword thrusting blue through the gooey coral and gold in her head. His hands curved around her breasts, thumbs moving in small, tight circles. A prickling excitement radiated out from between her legs as she kissed him harder, chafing the little scrape on the inside of her lip. Pain and pleasure swirled together in a double helix, and she came, just a little one, but deep. A single, quick squeeze at the crux of herself.
Do that again, she whispered.
Eric took her soft, electric hands and pulled her off the couch, stumbling backwards. His face was wide-eyed, laughing wonder.
It's all caramel in my head, he said.
He pushed her up ahead of him on the stairs. Every other step, she turned to kiss him, wanting the edge of his teeth again and the blue squeeze down in her belly. Her mouth had never known such hunger. She was so high, so skinless and wide open and floating in a dimension of desire utterly foreign to her.
Do it again. Make it hurt.
Part of her had sliced itself off, and now circled her ankles with the frenetic figure eights of a cat in heat, trying to formulate a request she barely understood. Do it. Closed up in her room, they kissed in the Christmas lights. Eric reached behind, took hold of the back of his shirt, and drew it forward over his head. Her chin tilted in wonder. She had never noticed before how a boy took his shirt off from back to front. He slid one beautiful arm, then the other out of the sleeves. And it was a revelation. Her own arms crossed, took hold of her shirt at opposite sides, and took it off the way a girl did, from the hem up. He was a boy. She was a girl. They touched. His skin was bronze and copper and gold. Her hand made ripples over his chest and shoulders and melted into him. She could reach within and put her fingers gently around his heart like it was the fragile, unfused skull of a newborn baby. She watched him take the rest of his clothes off. Belt and snap and zipper. A snake shedding its skin. Naked like that newborn, but strong and male and forged from metal. She ran her finger along the chain around his neck. Saint Birgitta smiled at her. The fish winked its single golden eye. The beauty of the lynx and a legacy passed from man to man, father to son.
I'm having your baby someday, she said. You know that, don't you?
Only one?
His hand slid down the back of her open jeans, pushing them down and pulling her belly against his mouth running up her neck over her chin. He kissed her top lip, then her bottom, and whispered into her mouth.
Have two.
She kicked her legs free of her pants, pushed Eric down on the bed and knelt across one of his legs, drew his shaking lips up into hers as she ground her hips down on his thigh, sliding and rubbing, catching the sweet spot. It wasn't working. Something was missing.
Come, honey, he whispered.
I can't, she thought, writhing in frustration. His hand slid along her head. 10 fingers wove into her tresses, folded into fists. A crackle of blue light as he pulled her hair.
Yes.
Her eyes closed as the S stretched out long, the hiss of a tattooed serpent.
Come for me,
he said. He released his grip, and the bite of pain at her scalp dissolved.
Do that again, she said.
What?
Pull my hair.
He did.
Harder,
she said, making her voice swirl a finger in the caramel inside his head. She felt his hesitation. Then he pulled.
Feels good,
she said into his mouth, kissing him with open eyes, feeding him her burnt sugar fingers to suck.
You're so good.
He tugged, slow and hard. Her follicles howled, and a sharp noise slipped out of her chest.
Too much?
More, I love it.
She pressed her teeth into his bottom lip, and an involuntary groan, much like her own, tumbled out of him. She held his face in her hands.
Make it hurt, she said, pushing him along, coaxing a child toward the classroom door. It's making me crazy. Feel how wet I am.
He dragged her head onto his shoulder. She slid along his leg, slippery and swollen, letting it build.
You're such a good lover.
She said, her tongue traced the seashell whorls of his ear.
Nothing makes me come like you.
Another groan in his chest and his mouth grabbed hers hard and smug. She had him by the ego. He loved to be called good. His hands pulled, his teeth stabbed. He was shedding his skin, turning inside out and transforming under her, rebirthing. A hero. A god.
Come.
He said, his breath like cinnamon now.
Make that sweet little pussy come for me.
You're so good. Pull hard. Don't stop. Eric.
The K splintered on her tongue and the world exploded under her eyes. Her hands hooked into claws, her nails pressing down into his skin, deeper. Eric's laughing delight filled her bones. He crooned her name over and under his breath, sing speaking praises.
I love watching that. God, you're beautiful.
He released her hair and wrapped his arms around her twitching, convulsing body. Her scalp throbbed with pain as the last bits of pleasure rippled out of her and onto his leg. She ran her mouth along his neck, salt and sweet. The springs groaned as she toppled off him and fell down in the sheets.
I love when you come like that, he said, and tell me things like that.
She put her forearm over her eyes, pressed down until the back of her eyelids turned to swirling patterns of gold.
I'm so high, she said.
His hand ran over her head.
Did I pull too hard?
Not hard enough. She felt his thumb glide on her mouth, and she touched her tongue to it, expecting to taste blood. Only skin and a hint of herself.
I'm kissing myself. Look at me,
he said. She took her arm away, waited until a blob of black bloomed like a flower in her gold vision, opening its petals to gradually reveal his face.
What just happened? He said. Why was that so good?
I don't know, she said. His smile flickered, indulgent and knowing. Nice try, his eyes seemed to say.
Tell me,
he whispered. Her own eyes welled up. The space between their bodies shivered, warped and rippled in tiny pinpricks of light. She was seeing their bond. It was real, a physical thing that existed between them.
I was born for you, she thought. My voice was born to reach your ears. You were born to hear everything I have to say.
It was the hurting, she said.
It's all I can feel,
he nodded, his profile leaving trails in the sparkling air.
Me too.
His hand ran along her stomach, touched the fish tattoo.
I felt so alive just then, he said, making you come. I felt like who I used to be.
I can see us, she said, moving her hand through the glittery air.
He caught it in his and held it to his face.
Lately, I feel like I'm either numb or dying. Nothing in the middle. Numb scares me. I'd almost rather die. At least it's something.
This is when you usually get anxious, she said.
Are you? Right now, are the wolves here?
No,
he said.
He slid against her body. Feel how hard I am.
You are.
She stroked his head.
I don't want to stop feeling like this. I don't care what it takes.
Come here, she said,
pulling at him.
What is happening?
He said, pushing into her.
I'm not afraid. I want it.
She rested her hand on the small of his back, felt skin ripple over muscles, felt muscles move like continents, obeying the commands his brain sent along nerves, tendons, and bones, making his body move in her. He knew what to do.
He was born for me.
I'm scared it will go too far, Daze.
It's just a different room in the cathedral, she said. It's still ours. We built it. It's all making love, remember? Nothing we make scares me.
He looked at her a long time. Then he began to nod. She had him.
She held his face, kissed him deep,
then let her arms drop over her head, finding the headboard.
Tie my hands, she said.
He got one of her scarves and bound her wrists tight. Knots were his friend. He knew how to tie off cables above the stage and secure the fly ropes in the wings. He wasn't fooling around. He set his palms on her bowed elbows and leaned his weight down on her, his face hovering above hers. Something new and dangerous and beautiful in his eyes. She brushed her mouth against his.
I love you. Show me everything. Let me taste it. I want to feel you dying.
He stared at her, swirling pinpricks in his eyes.
Do you trust me? She said,
as if he was the one tied up. He nodded, the tip of his nose brushing hers.
I only trust you. If I step too far off the edge of myself, you're the only one who can pull me back.
Unplug the lights, she said. Come into the dark with me.
Like a snake, his arm slithered between the bed and the wall, and the Christmas twinkles died. He leaned and yanked the drapes across the window, cutting most of the light from the street. He crawled up and over her again. His hands circled her tied wrists. She couldn't see his face, but somehow she knew it looked older. She felt it, the months since the shooting etched hard under his eyes.
"Promise you'll tell me when it's enough." A little bit of light flashed off his teeth.
She licked his mouth.
"I'll tell."
It wasn't enough. He came at her like a night terror, backhanded her with his raw brute need. His unchecked strength astonished her, then filled her veins like another drug. She pulled against her bonds and begged for more. By morning, her wrists were ringed red, and her upper arms wore his fingerprint bruises like a new tattoo. He fucked 100 words out of her throat, and not one was stop. They limped from bed, scratched and scraped, bone dry, hungover, and wrung out black and exhausted. They didn't know what it was. They knew it wasn't enough. Nobody scars you but me.
He surprised me, Daisy said.
How? Rita said.
Eric never had much artifice. He was drawn to the theater world, but he wasn't a theatrical person, not a daydreamer or a pretender. But when he was high, he would shrug himself off and do anything. He liked cocaine more than I did. He really liked the confidence of that particular high. Coke made him a nut, a hyper goofball. He'd dance when he was coked up. But he dug the ecstasy too, and on a high roll, he was sexually fearless. He'd play games, play any part, be someone else, tie me up, even pretend he was raping me. She drew her breath past her pounding heart. I've never told anyone about this. Can you tell me? She looked down at the ball of her clenched fingers. It was something about the hurting. Something about when sex was rough or violent or even painful. I began to want it, like another drug. I wanted him to hit me, to hurt me. Not in anger, though. It's like... She pulled one hand free and dug the heel of it against her eye, trying to press the idea into place. It's so hard to explain, so confusing and twisted, because it was like him hurting me helped me feel safe. Does that even make sense?
Don't worry about sense, Rita said. You spill, I sort.
If he hurt me, then nobody and nothing else could. Like violent sex was a vaccine against the world. One time we...
Daisy stopped as a cold, nauseous wind blew through her chest.
Fuck, she said, beginning to shake.
It's all right, Rita said. Let it come to you. You've been here before, and you always come out the other side.
Daisy pulled the chocolate brown pillow into her lap, holding on. Her arms were struck with the sudden need for a live being to clutch, a wise, sober dog. She needed to feel a heartbeat. One time, he was kissing me, and I bit him. Bit his lip. The blood was in our mouths. Not a lot, but enough to taste.
Were you high?
He rolled. I didn't. We'd smoked a joint, but only had one ecstasy pill, so he took it.
I see.
And when I made him bleed, he went off. Threw me face first down on the floor, held my hands behind my back, and gave it to me. And for the first time, I felt an edge of fear. Like I understood what he meant about going too far. I could see too far. See the line, the boundary. When you're high like that, you get really visual and sensory. Existentially descriptive. You're in the moment and narrating your life. I could feel my mind split down the center, and one half was in pain. It was coming into me so hard, my eyeballs rattled. He was holding my hands behind my back and putting all his weight on me. I'd lost weight, and I'm not built with a lot of cushion to begin with, so my hip bones were grinding into the floor. My shoulders were screaming. My face was against the throw rug, so one cheekbone was taking the brunt of it all.
And the other half?
The other half was like the referee. Whistle in the mouth, eagle eye on the line, with this calm, dry voice reminding me I was the only one who could pull him back. All I had to do was say stop or too much, and he would back down.
And it was getting to that point.
Yes. But flirting with the boundary, seeing how close I could get to it.
She shook her head and spread her hands, holding the enormous bubble full of her confused, shameful secrets.
I don't know how else to say it. Those nights up in my room, walking the line, I had the greatest orgasms of my life. I haven't come that way since, and I'm terrified I never will again, under any circumstances. Whether it's straight or sober, fucking or loving, I don't know if I ever will feel the way I felt with him.
Hold that thought a moment, Rita said. Don't close the bubble yet. I want you to finish the night. You were flirting with the line. Did it get crossed? Did he stop when you told him, or did you even tell him?
Daisy closed her eyes. I remember my mind kind of took inventory, triage. What was hurting me the most? What simply had to stop? And it was my shoulders. I think it must have been my ballet brain making the call. If he kept pulling on my shoulders like that, I wouldn't be able to get them into fifth position the next day.
She raised her arms to illustrate, shaping a curved wreath around her head. I said something, stop or whatever, but he kept going. I remember turning my head as much as I could, and my cheekbone was raw against the rug. I spoke the way you do in a loud nightclub. Shouting is useless. You have to throw your voice down into the middle of your chest. I didn't yell, but he had a hurricane in his head, and I had to slice my voice through it and say, "Honey, let go my hands, please." I knew the honey and the please would get him, send a signal. He let go. Being able to get my arms under me and the grinding pressure off my shoulders and cheek let me finish, or let me let him finish. I was done at that point. I had come to pieces. I had just enough strength to ride it out.
How was he afterward?
Did you share with him what it was like?
Her mouth opened and closed as a stream of flickering particles passed by her eyes.
I didn't have to, she said. I don't know if you believe me. I want you to believe me when I say I didn't have to actively tell him.
He rolled off my back and lay on the floor a few minutes, catching his breath. It was dark, so I couldn't see him. He was a black-on-black silhouette. And he said, "Turn on the lights, I need to see you." I crawled over to plug in the lights. My arms could hardly hold me up. We dragged ourselves on top of the bed, gulping water and gulping air. Then we stared at each other forever. Everything was gold and bright and beautiful and peaceful. I fell into his eyes and never wanted to come out. His fingers came up and touched my cheekbone, which was sore and stinging, but I thought, it's all right when you do it. And a second later, he whispered, "Nobody scars you but me."
Rita's head rose and fell as she repeated it. "Nobody scars you but me."
I loved it, she said. It literally made me feel safe and protected.
She snatched a handful of tissues and pressed them to her face.
"Are you all right? Do you need to stop?"
"No,"
Daisy said, muffled.
"I'm blowing a bubble and I'm finishing this."
"You're doing great. Whenever you're ready."
Another breath, the slow release of her lungs, and a shimmering sphere came into view. Soapy and iridescent, but strong. Her hands opened like a cradle for it.
"Do you have it?"
"We pushed it too far one night," she said, feeding the words inside. "We went over the line, and he blew the whistle, stopped the game entirely. He couldn't do it anymore."
"What happened?"
The bubble shook in her hands, threatening to pop.
"This is hard," she said.
"One word at a time," Rita said. "Any words you want. I do not judge, blush, or scare." Daisy licked her dry lips. She was pure blushing judgment and scared flat, trapped between clinical terms and juvenile peekaboo euphemisms, unable to just spit it out.
"One night, he..."
She swallowed, hating herself for being such a stupid prude. "He wanted to fuck me in the ass, and I..." Her chest seemed to collapse. A fine sweat dripped down her back.
"Take a deep breath," Rita said, getting up and taking a bottle of water from the mini fridge under her desk.
Daisy drank a few sips.
I don't know why it was so hard to say, she said. I'm a grown woman.
You are now. You weren't then. And parts of you are stuck back then, frozen at 20 years old.
Let those parts thaw out now. You're doing fine.
Daisy sniffed hard, her face twisting.
That night, had you ever had anal sex before?
Daisy shook her head and took another sip. The water bottle became her bubble, a tangible vessel she could fill. She aimed her words toward it.
No, neither of us had. We were rolling across the ceiling and we didn't know what the fuck we were doing. No buildup, no foreplay. We didn't even use lube or anything. Just right to it.
Rita said nothing. Behind her glasses, her eyes squeezed shut, then opened again.
It hurt me. Awful. And I came so hard.
Her face burned as she remembered, pain like a dirty spike into her belly, a caduceus of twin snakes spiraling up her spine.
Let me in. Let me hurt you.
She was tearing and breaking. She cried down into the pillows, clenching his fingers. She felt bright, alive and beautiful, wild and terrible. Dirt